evening, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, November 13th edition of the City Council of Aurora Grande. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Herman?
Here.
Councilmember Varnage?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill is absent today.
And we wish him a happy birthday. He's traveling for his birthday. Please join me in a moment of reflection. Thank you. And for the flag salute this evening, we have the Central Coast Senior Center, and this is Lonnie Kensel. Come on up. Would you stand with me, please?
I would like to dedicate this flag salute this evening to the men and women of the military who serve and have served to keep this nation free. Please place your hand over your heart and say with me, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And please feel free to continue.
I hope so. Thank you. I have with me this evening my support group, our current president of our board, Athena, and the 2018 Grand Marshal of the Aurora Grande Harvest Festival and charter member of the Central Coast Senior Center, Pearl, and of course, my husband, Kent. The Central Coast Senior Center is located at 1580 Railroad Street in Oceano. Our hours are 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization and have supported and served seniors aged 50 plus in the Five Cities area for over 27 years. We rely on contributions, membership dues, and volunteers to keep our doors open. Currently, our membership is about 255, with 35% of our membership being Arroyo Grande residents. Some of the activities are, we have Tai Chi twice a week, we have line dancing, beginning and advanced, bunco, tops, bingo twice a week, wood carving, yoga, art group, we have a ukulele group, and pinochle. We have an attorney who comes once a month and offers a 15-minute free consultation. On the second Saturday of each month, we have a lunch member meeting. The food is prepared by the Kiwanis Club of Arroyo Grande Valley. The meal is $8 for members and $10 for non-members. Please feel free to call the center during regular business hours, and our knowledgeable front desk volunteers will be glad to give you more information. Thank you for the opportunity to let you know about the Central Coast Senior Center.
Thank you for all you do. That brings us to item 5, agenda review. Is there anyone who'd like to move anything around this evening?
No, ma'am.
Okay. And we have no closed session announcements. So can we move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
A motion, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, we pass. Which takes us to special presentations. We have 4 special presentations this evening, so I'm very excited to give these. The first one is to Larry Daly. Could you come up to the mic, please? Is a mayor's commendation, and in recognition for your volunteer work to design and construct the annual Halloween Haunted Maze and the commitment of time and labor you provided over the course of 2 days to ensure the maze was constructed safely and completely on time is very much appreciated, and your dedication to the city and the community is admirable.
Thank you
very much.
I'd like to thank the park
Parks and Rec, Sharon and Karen to keep inviting me back every year to help out with this project, and I appreciate the asking me to help, and love doing it. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And can I invite up Life Point Church? Of the volunteer efforts by members of Life Point Church to deliver, assemble, and disassemble 12 carnival games for the annual Halloween Carnival and Haunted Maze event. The carnival games provided by Life Point Church offered fun and entertainment for over 1,000 attendees at the event, and your dedication to the city and community is admirable as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Absolutely.
People have thanked us for our hard work in this, and I just want to say that it was work, but it wasn't very hard because the staff here at the City of Rio Grande cooperates, leads well, and it's a great team you have here, so they should be commended as well. So thank you so much.
And thirdly, we have the Key Club of Napomo High School. Superstars. This is in recognition of your volunteer efforts by members of the Napomo High School Key Club to assist with the setup of the annual Halloween Carnival and Haunted Maze event. The members of this youth service group went above and beyond by staying an additional 2 hours past their scheduled shift to operate the Halloween Carnival games. The Key Club's support and willingness to go the extra mile, as well as the club's dedication and commitment to the city and the community, is admirable. Thank you.
The Key Club here is supported by the Arroyo Grande Valley Kiwanis, and we provide them with leadership camp and with scholarship. We currently have 56 members of our Key Club, which is just tremendous from the high school. From the beginning of the school year, our mission, by the way, is to provide service to family, church, and...
Sorry, can we have you step around there so the people at home can see you?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Didn't realize there were people at home. But... Oh, gosh, sorry.
You're going to get fined Thursday.
Catch me later. Yes, anyway, where was it? 56 members of our Key Club, and we serve our community is the main process of these young people. Since the beginning of the year, they have done the Echo Slow Beach Cleanup. They've done the Napomo Fun Run. They've done the Harvest Festival, working with the Arroyo Grande, and, of course, they were at the Halloween event. Coming up this next Sunday, they will provide a beverage service to 1,000 people at the St. Joe's Community Service dinner, and they will be doing 4 hours of bell ringing in December for the Salvation Army, besides helping sort toys and distribute toys. We are supported wonderfully in this at our high school by our principal, Principal John Denner, who deserves recognition. What I would like to do is have these young gentlemen tell you their names and how long they've been with Key Club, and introduce themselves.
So my name is Jesse Kabakungian. I've been in Key Club for 3 years, and I'm the vice president.
My name is Joshua Enriquez Diaz, and I've been with Key Club for only 3 months, but it has provided me with excellent opportunities that I'm very grateful for.
I want to know that Joshua has been at every event that we've had, so we are very proud to have him in our club. But we thank you very much for this honor tonight and appreciate. And if you need us, we're there to serve. So call on us at any time.
Go Titans. And may I have Paola Reyes? Hi, Paola. This is a honorary proclamation declaring November 2018 as National Hospice Palliative Care Month. Whereas, hospice and palliative care empower people facing serious or life-limiting illness to live as fully as possible, ensuring people dignity, choice, and quality of life. And whereas the hospice model involves an interdisciplinary, team-oriented approach to treatment, including expert mental care, medical care, quality symptom control, and comprehensive pain management as a foundation of care. And whereas beyond providing physical treatment, hospice attends to the patient's emotional, spiritual, and family needs and provides family services like respite care and bereavement counseling. And whereas in an increasingly fragmented and broken healthcare system, hospice is one of the few sectors that demonstrates how healthcare can and should work for at its best for its patients. And whereas a growing body of peer-reviewed research indicates that timely access to hospice and palliative care can decrease hospitalizations and emergency room visits and increase quality of life for patients and family caregivers, and every year more than 1.4 million Americans living with life-limiting illness and their families received care from the nation's hospice programs in communities throughout the United States, and whereas more than 355,000 trained volunteers contribute 16 million hours of service to hospice programs annually in the U.S., and whereas Central Coast Hospice, Dignity Health Hospice, Hospice of San Luis Obispo County, and Wilshire Hospice provide hospice care and bereavement counseling respectively to individuals within the County of San Luis Obispo, and hospice and palliative care organizations are advocates and educators about advanced care planning that help individuals make decisions about the care they want. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray, Mayor Pro Tem of the City of Arroyo Grande, do hereby proclaim November 2018 as National Hospice and Palliative Care Month, and encourage citizens to increase their understanding and awareness of care at the end of life, and to observe this month with appropriate activities and programs.
I just want to say thank you to the City Council members for recognizing November. This proclamation really means a lot to all hospices, and we hope to continue to provide services to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. That takes us to item number 7, community comments and suggestions. This is public comment period for the public to come up and talk about items that are not scheduled on this agenda. You'll get a chance to talk about things that are a little bit later. And just a reminder that we're going to have you limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and your comments should be directed to the City Council as a whole body.
Good evening. My name is Linda Osti. I'm a resident of Arroyo Grande in the village. Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem Karen and City Council persons and staff. I'd like to offer an invocation. Lord, thank you for this day, O God. Let us continue to celebrate our veterans, both living and those who have made the ultimate sacrifice in their families. Let us remember November 11, 1918, the end of World War I. Let us pray for our firefighters and all our first responders, for those affected by the fires, for the lives lost in their families, for those who have lost pets and animals, and their homes filled with memories. Let us pray for the leaders of our city and our country so that they can live and lead by the golden rule. And there, in our dealings, may we be gentle, understanding, and kind, with our tempers under control. May our public and private lives and actions be consistent with our prayers, strong, holy, and righteous. This we ask in your name. And I would also like to make a little announcement. I'm a member of the Pismo Beach Five Cities Rotary Club for the last 21 years, and this is our 6th year to offer a free Christmas movie at the Fair Oaks Theater on December the 8th. It's always the second Saturday of every December, so put it on your calendar for the next years. And it's 10:30. Santa Claus will be there. The admission is free. You can bring a non-perishable food item if you like, and that goes to the Christmas baskets at St. Pat's, or if you want to bring an unwrapped toy, that goes to the Boys and Girls Club. Santa Claus, like I said, will be there for pictures. We'll have Christmas music, and we'll have 50 free raffle gifts, so every 5th person will be getting a raffle gift for free. So I hope everybody can come, and it's everyone's favorite movie, The Bishop's Wife with David Niven, Loretta Young, and Cary Grant. So if you haven't seen it on the big screen, this is your chance. Hope to see you all there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is John DeBio. I'm with Family Care Network. And I wanted to thank all the City Council members and Jim Bergman for the support for our children and youth that we serve in the community. And a special thanks to Tim Brown, who's helped us out with a landscape project. We provide foster care and transitional housing services and other family-based mental health services here in Arroyo Grande. And truly, without a caring community, we just couldn't do it, and it really means a lot to our kids. Just as a brief update, last October, we were fortunate enough to receive some funds through the Community Development Block Grant to help us with a cellular project, and I just wanted to give a quick update that that is still in process. We are still waiting for the funds to be released through the HUD. And usually they're released in the summer, and I was informed they're running a little bit behind. So our target to complete the project will be March of 2019. We're really excited because through that investment, we're going to be able to save over $117,000 over 20 years. So not only will it be good for the environment, we'll be able to take those funds and reinvest them into the services for our kids. And so I just really wanted to thank you all for that. And also wanted to give a special thanks to the Roy Grande Police Department, who's just been a real support to us and some of our kids from a really community policing background and really have taken some special interest in some of our youth, and we truly couldn't do it without those partners as well. So I also wanted to introduce somebody who motivates me to keep doing what I've been doing for 30 years, Araceli.
Hi, my name is Araceli, and I am a youth partner for Family Care Network. What's a youth partner, you ask? Well, I am a former foster youth that now helps other foster youth in completing goals such as finding employment, completing educational goals, and overall increasing their independent living skills. As a former TASE youth myself, and on behalf of all the youth we serve in Arroyo Grande, I just wanted to thank the City Council for all of your support and care for the foster youth in your community with this award. So thank you.
Wow, thank you. Would you mind reading that? I think that would be nice. And the community can hear what that says. This is a surprise to us, so...
So, Arroyo Grande City Council, for your generous contribution to the Family Care Network, your valuable partnership has directly contributed to our mission and will help us to better serve our community's most vulnerable children, youth, and families. On behalf of the Family Care Network Board of Directors, Executive Committee, and staff, we thank you for making a difference in our community.
And we thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you.
I need to ask a question. I apologize for asking this, and if I have put you on the hot spot, I apologize, but I need to ask.
Sure.
The last grant we did was not for, as I understood it, cellular. It was for some foster care homes that were getting work done in Arroyo Grande. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So, yeah, there's two projects, and so I might not have the dates on each of them, but we have a complex where we have transition age youth housed there, and there's a couple of things that we're working on there. One is a kind of a landscape project, and working with Home Depot to help us with that project. And then my understanding through a grants person that we also received some assistance to help with the cellular project. So I may not be exactly familiar with
it. Okay, no, I appreciate the clarification. Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm glad to come back and share more if I need to.
Really appreciate it. I believe you're talking about retrofits of
yes.
solar and also utilities, and,
yes.
and you're saving a bunch of money over that 20-year
yes.
period.
So it's more than just cellular.
It's exactly. Right. It's a solar retrofit,
yes.
heating, other items in that.
So it's
building.
Being used as the way it was requested.
That's correct.
Absolutely, and we've been tracking it, Joanna, through our fund resource development piece, and generally the funds are released the additional funds through the county in the summer, but they've been delayed, so we're hoping to hear by October and then be able to put together the volunteers and the materials and get the project complete.
Very good. I appreciate the clarification.
You bet.
Thank you very much
for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It
is not often that people come to the dais and give us awards, so thank you so much. Anyone else like to speak on public comment? All right, hearing no one, that takes us to item number 8, City Manager Report.
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem Ray, Council Members, Jim Bergman, your City Manager. I have a few items, and they're all very fun. First, welcome to Aldi's. I think everyone has probably visited, and if you haven't, it's on your list to do. They opened on Grand Avenue, and I was out there early in the morning and saw a line of people very excited for another place where they could go shopping and get their weekly needs. Second, Bo Pryor and myself, as well as Councilmember Barnage and her family, attended a homeless needs hearing last Wednesday, which was held at the Regional Center, and it was an opportunity for the county, as well as other cities, to hear the needs of the community when it comes to homeless, and particularly it's important because it's going to help us apply for the Homeless Emergency Assistance Program funds, which will be coming up pretty soon. The next fun item, Turkey Trot, is the 41st Annual Turkey Trot is happening this Sunday, November 18th, at Arroyo Grande High School. It starts at 1 p.m. for signups, and races begin at 2 p.m. It's for preschoolers through 8th grade, and it's $5 for participants to enter, but everyone gets a t-shirt. First place winners in each of their classes receive a frozen turkey, second place a frozen chicken, and third place a frozen game hen. There's plenty of raffle prizes that have been donated by local merchants that deal with athletic and kids sports, and a big shout out to the Lions Club for hosting this event again. They're wonderful, and sounds like a fun thing for the kids. You notice when you're coming in tonight, the Village Improvement Association has the lights up in the trees, and the village looks beautiful. Wanted to thank them for that. They're also doing the Christmas Parade November 25th. It starts at 5 o'clock, and it's always one of the most memorable events of the year. The VIA is also hosting the Elegant Night in the Village on December 2nd at 4 p.m., and those are my items for the night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item 9, the consent agenda. Anyone have anything you'd like to pull this evening?
No, thank you.
Would anyone like to make a motion then?
Second.
Oh, yeah, I suppose we need to do that, don't we? Would anyone like to come and talk about items 9A through 9E? All right, then, seeing no one coming to the dais, Mr. Brown?
Move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Can we get roll call, please?
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes. Item 10 is public hearings. Kelly, did you want to read that?
Item 10A is consideration of preliminary approval of community development block grant CDBG projects for year 2019.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the council. And this year, we have Planning Manager Downing giving the CDBG report.
Yes, good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. I'm Matt Downing, I'm your planning manager. I'm excited to be here this evening talking about the Community Development Block Grant since taking over this program from Kelly Heffernan, who retired back in June, our associate planner. So it's my first year really delving into the CDBG world, and I'm looking forward to this evening. So a little bit of background. CDBG is a federal program administered by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. It provides local governments with financial resources to address a wide range of community development needs, such as affordable housing, social services, job creation, and public facility improvements. The County of San Luis Obispo administers this program in our area, and allocations are made on a formula basis. All of the cities in the county, with the exception of Grover Beach, participate in the CDBG entitlement program and receive funds annually. Grover Beach competes separately for funds provided by the state CDBG program, which are highly competitive and have strict eligibility requirements. Now, the main objective of the CDBG program is to develop a viable urban community by providing decent housing, a suitable living environment, and economic opportunity. And CDBG funds must be used for activities that meet one of these national objectives listed on this page. So either benefiting low or moderate income persons, aiding in the prevention or elimination of slums or blight, or addressing an urgent community development need that poses a serious or immediate threat to public health and welfare. So there are different requirements regarding CDBG. So no less than 70% of each year's allotment can be used for projects or programs that benefit low-income persons. We have a 30% cap on projects that eliminate blight. There are limits on the types of projects or programs that can be undertaken. There's also a cap for what we call public services projects. That's at 15% of the total allocation each year. There are restrictions against funds paying for projects and programs that are already initiated. There are also the CDBG-funded projects need to be completed in a timely manner, and they have to comply with federal environmental laws such as NEPA, labor laws such as prevailing wage, and procurement regulations. Now, looking at year 2019, the county has estimated that the city will receive approximately $79,560 in CDBG funds in the fall of 2019. This is a little bit more than a 4% increase from 2018. And as I mentioned, the county will help the city administer the program. That's in conjunction with our cooperation agreement. So even though we're seeing this increase at about 4% from 2018, we're still down overall in terms of our average that we received from 2001 to 2011. During that time period, we were looking at about 112,000, so we're still definitely below that number. And these CDBG funds are divided into six different categories, those being public services, which I mentioned has a 15% cap for your total $79,560. Public facilities, which has no cap, economic development, area benefit, housing, rehabilitation, and administration. So the allocation of funds for public services, as I mentioned, is capped at $15,000. This year, based on our estimates, we're looking at about $11,934. A little bit of background. So typically in the past, we've received these requests exceed the funds that we're generally allowed to give out. And so due to that fact, due to the stricter CDBG regulations handed down by HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the opportunity through the Jim Guthrie Community Service Grant Program, the city has not been receiving very many applications for these public services categories. We've seen a lot more of those requests come through the Jim Guthrie grant program in recent years. However, this year the Five Cities Homeless Coalition did submit an application for $7,500 for a program that provides subsistence payments for folks facing eviction, so to prevent from evictions, as well as providing money to help cover security deposits to end homelessness. The coalition's also requesting $37,000 from the county, as well as an additional $5,500 from the city of Pismo Beach. So this brings their total up to around $50,000. They did a very similar program last year, they did a pilot program 2 years ago in Grover Beach. It was very successful, so they requested money last year. And so this year, we got this request again. Staff has reached out to the coalition regarding the request, and also if staff should be anticipating a Jim Guthrie Community Service Grant request as well. And we kind of talked back and forth regarding the direction council had previously given, which was focus those requests through the Jim Guthrie program and keep the CDBG funds toward the ADA physical improvements that the city has. So even though that's been the direction, and we did provide money last year, it's recommended again that this year the council authorize and allocate the Five Cities Homeless Coalition with a $7,500 request as a kind of final year, and provide this direction back to staff to move forward with future CDBG funds, which would be in year 2020, moving forward with those on the focusing on ADA barrier removal projects. And that leads us to the public facilities category. So there are no funding caps for public facilities. It's previously been a city priority to have ADA accessibility deficiencies addressed with these funds. And previous projects have included curb ramp installations at mid-block crosswalks, the Women's Club ADA improvements, as well as improving accessibility at the Soda Sports Complex. This program year, it's recommended that funding for the city ADA projects in the amount of $56,148 be allocated to curb ramps on the Castile Del Mar Extension Project, as well as ramps and crossings in the vicinity of Ocean View Elementary. Regarding administration, staff recommends allocating the total $10,343 for, that should say, county administrative costs, not count administrative costs. And this is in conjunction with our cooperation agreement with the county. From the total cap of $15,912, the city's potential allocation would be $5,569. Based on the time and personnel resources it takes to administer this program, staff is recommending the council basically authorize that total amount to be allocated for administration. Now, these other funding categories we have listed, we did not receive any applications for this year. It includes economic development, which does not have a cap, an area benefit, which has a 30% cap, which, again, we didn't receive any, and housing rehabilitation. So last year, we did fund the Family Care Network project in total of $58,000, and we did that in conjunction with providing some assistance to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition for the same program as they are requesting this year. And so here we have the final recommended allocations for year 2019. I'll note that the 2018 allocation column is corrected from what it does say in your staff report. I will admit that was an error. I was looking at the preliminary allocations when writing my staff report and didn't look at the actual physical allocations that the council directed. So this is updated. So as I mentioned last year, council allocated $7,294 to Five Cities Homeless Coalition. We last year did not take any money for architectural barrier removals, and the council allocated the $58,000 to the Family Care Network. We also did not take, the city did not take the full administration possibility, and the council said the difference we would be given to Family Care Network. So that's how we went last year. Looking at the requested allocations this year, as I mentioned, $7,500 to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, which is recommended to be approved. The remaining funds besides administration going toward the removal of architectural barriers in the vicinity of Ocean View Elementary and on the Castile Del Mar Extension. And so it is recommended that the City Council provide the preliminary approval of the proposed projects to be funded with the City's allocation of CDBG funds for year 2019. And I will do my best to answer any questions that the Council has.
Questions?
Thank you. First of all, I appreciate your taking over this program. I do have a concern, though, or I guess a confusion. It's why are we allocating money for Five Cities Homeless Coalition through here when we should be doing it, in my mind, through the Jim's Guthrie Grant Program? I don't understand. Where's the difference? What's the
thought process?
Yeah.
There? Yeah. So there is some thought behind that. The Five Cities Homeless Coalition, given their the $7,500 is quite a bit of money when we have 20,000 dollars allocated for the Jim Guthrie Community Service Grant Program. And so in the past, they've kind of felt that that's a lot to take away from other potential nonprofits, okay. So they brought that forward under this program.
Okay, thank you for that. That's all. Thank you.
Sure. Manager Downey, is the deadline for completed applications for the Jim Guthrie Community Service Grant, is that November 30th?
November 30th.
And so anybody still wanting to apply for that grant, for those that grant opportunity, how would one obtain an application?
Go to the city's website, rogrande.org. There is a search field there, and start typing Jim Guthrie, and it'll pop right up with this year's current information, this year's application. And if there's any doubt, they can always contact me.
And can those be submitted online, or do they have to be hand-delivered?
They do have to be delivered in paper format.
In paper. You know, this stuff, hard copy, it's paper. Okay, and then the other question I had, I know there was quite a bit of discussion last year related to the city administrative fees, and it was really a way of kind of getting a win-win situation for both Family Care Network as well as Five Cities Homeless Coalition, as well as addressing the other city infrastructure needs. So do we have any idea in the ballpark of that $1,000 that was, I'm not sure if that $1,000 was what was retained by staff for administrative fees. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is you're requesting $5,569. So is there any peel off of that $5,000 based on what we learned from 2018 and the actual city administration staff costs, I guess is what it would be. And if so, is it significant enough where we could put that into the infrastructure projects for this year?
Certainly, that's definitely up to the will of the council if you'd like to do that. Pardon me. What I will say, having taken this over, I now realize how time intensive it is. And so we do go through that administrative funding pretty quickly for things like preparing staff reports for this evening. All of those types of administrative tasks do end up being covered by that money. So while we could probably easily chip away at the $5,500 recommended this year, it's up to the will of the council, but unless Teresa.
Do you also have responsibilities at the for the county, at the county level related to reporting?
There is definitely dialogue and reporting back and forth between myself and the county. I've gotten very familiar with the county's personnel dealing with CDBG over there recently.
Okay. And then I'd like to know how the projects for Castile Del Mar and Ocean View Elementary, what was that selection process on the $56,000 going to, I guess in my mind, two projects, $56,000 is a lot of money, but when you're dealing with concrete and all of that, it really isn't a lot of money. But if you could give me a little background on how those two projects rose to the top.
We targeted those two particular projects because the Castile Del Mar extension is on the near horizon for us. We are anticipating needing to include several driveway ramps that will intersect with the new road extension, and we want to make sure that they're properly accessible with new ramps, and that ties in with the project nicely, and it's near a school, which is our prioritized area. The Ocean View, we had a study done a couple years ago identifying some priority projects that we've been wanting to get to, and so we targeted that next for the remaining funds after Castile Del Mar.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Those are all my questions. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnage?
Thank you. First of all, I need to disclose that I am a an uncompensated member of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition Board, but the FPBC has given us the green light, who serves on nonprofits in that capacity, to take part in these discussions. So my question is, last year I wasn't part of the discussion, but now it's refreshing my memory that we gave the $58,000 of family care and the $7,294 to FISA's Homeless Coalition. How did we get back to giving money through this rather than the Jim Guthrie grants? The year before, did we give any money to any nonprofits, or was it all to infrastructure and we just worked? Because I feel like that switched a little bit, but I don't remember this from last year because I wasn't here.
Certainly. So really the switch occurred in 2014. That's when we really implemented the community, at the time, the Community Service Grant Program, now the Jim Guthrie Community Service Grant Program. Before that, we were getting applications more for these public services projects and programs and things like that. Again, the funding requests far exceeded the funding availability, and because of all the strings attached to it and all the program requirements, it was deemed that rather than putting small nonprofits in our area through that realm, we would allocate $20,000 a year to this program. So prior to 2018, we actually did spend all of it on administration and the public facilities. We did not...
That's my question. So in 2017, all of the nonprofits applied through the Jim Guthrie grants, and all of the money here went to the barriers for the handicap accessible.
Yes, I believe 2017 it was specifically the Soto Sports accessibility projects.
Okay, and then last year with the big amount for the $58,000 going to Family Care Network, why did we switch back?
It was a unique opportunity for a couple of different reasons. We were hoping to get work going on our ADA transition plan, which would have helped to better prioritize which of the architectural barriers we would be working on. Additionally, again, Family Care Network coming forward saying we need to do this project. We believe it'll help us be sustainable in the long run. That was a unique circumstance, and so it was brought forward to the council, and the council decided to fund that opportunity.
Okay. I think it's great. I just wondered, because I wasn't part of the discussion, why we switched that, and those are good reasons, and I appreciate that explanation. Before we did the switchover, before we created the community grants and the Jim Guthrie community grants, how much approximately, and I realize each year it changes depending on what we get from the county, how much did we allocate to public services? My thinking is right now we give $20,000 is the pot for all the nonprofits that come forward. Is that similar to what we were giving through the CDBG prior to when we split it off?
So obviously it would fluctuate every year depending on our actual CDBG allocation, but it also has that 15% cap. So if we ever got to a point where we would be giving $20,000 to the public services, it would have been during the heyday of the CDBG, where we were seeing over $100,000 allocated to the city.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. Those are all my questions. Thank you.
I had a couple easy ones and a hard one. First of all, Councilmember Burnage is refreshing my memory. I seem to remember that the reason we didn't do anything through public facilities last year was because we had an internal study going on, and that study was not completed at that time. Can you confirm or deny?
I can confirm. That was the consideration. We are updating our existing ADA transition plan. We wanted to work on that update and the reprioritization if needed for those projects. That study is underway. It takes a lot of work from our building official and our public works department that have been also very busy on CIP projects. So we're making way on that, but we've had to put some other projects ahead of that. Nonetheless, our current plan allows us to target high trafficked areas and schools, and so that's what we continue to do.
So now that I'm organizing these from easy to hard, so we're going to the medium one now. Ocean View, specifically, what are we talking about doing? Oh, look at that.
we
We did some conversations with the school district a couple years ago. They're continuing. We've identified some projects, but not the funding. So they've remained on our radar, and path of travel and accessibility are part of those, and that's why we targeted this particular project for these funds.
Okay, and the hard one. So CDBG funds are meant to go to low and things that benefit low and moderate, or get rid of blight, or solve urgent community needs or serious and immediate threats. Why do we have Castillo del Mar on this list? Because I can think of some serious and immediate threats, one in particular, but I don't really understand how Castillo del Mar makes this list other than we'd really like to do it. It's simply what we've been spending public facility funds on for the last several years are ramps, so removal of barriers for accessibility, and that's the same thing we're targeting now. We just are going to be including new path of travel because we're modifying the road and extending the road for the school driveway purposes, and we want to make sure that those ramps are included with the project, and that gives us an opportunity to do so.
You for school driveways? Because I thought you said it was something else just a few moments ago.
The Castillo del Mar borders the behind the high school,
right.
And so we've had to design in where access driveways will meet Castillo del Mar, and we'll also be including ramps at each of those
on the north side of Castillo del Mar.
On the yes.
Do you have did you have a graphic ready to go, Mr.
Unfortunately,
Downing?
No.
And here's my issue with this one. I'm having a hard time with this one. There just really isn't that much traffic back there. There's just not that much pedestrian traffic, and yet we still haven't done anything about a crosswalk between Alpine and 101. And we've had that conversation here several times. That I see as an immediate public threat. We haven't had funding to do that, and so I'm really having a hard time making Castillo del Mar rise to that level of other projects that we just don't have done yet.
Alpine and Grand?
Specifically, we're talking about how we do not have a crosswalk, a pedestrian crosswalk, between essentially 7-Eleven and McDonald's. And we've had that discussion here at Council several times in the last couple of years. And I guess I'm asking, this is a great opportunity to get that done. And yet we're putting something that really isn't going to see any pedestrian traffic ahead of that.
Are you then referring to a mid-block crossing?
Yes.
Okay. And so we were including mid-block crossing areas and those design considerations for including them or not in the Grand Avenue Master Plan, which we're targeting to do holistically at that point. Since that isn't complete, we're going back to schools for ADA accessibility projects.
When will that be complete?
We have had several workshops and planning opportunities for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan. That study is one of the several we intend to roll out upon the new year.
And so what you're saying is we can't look at a crosswalk until that's done?
I'm only saying, and certainly all targeting different accessibility projects is certainly up to the council. I'm just explaining the methodology why we chose the school projects at this time. And the benefit of looking at the Grand Avenue Master Plan as a whole, as a corridor plan, gives us a little bit of a better idea in terms of where and if absolutely necessary we need to include mid-block crossings, because they're the most difficult and challenging crossing opportunities for
main corridors. They're due to safety considerations. So we have to really think carefully about where to include them and the design design of those bulb outs, pedestrian refuges in the middle of them, and all the bells and whistles to make them as safe as possible if they are, if the city does intend to include them in the future, and exactly where the most beneficial and safe place would be.
I know I'm being a little bit argumentative, but doesn't this, I mean, the council has identified we want one there. We have had that discussion here already. And so it seems to me that that meets all the tests for what we would use CDBG funding for, especially if we're having trouble getting to that finish point, that's what this kind of money in a place where this council has already determined it's an urgent need to get the funding to do exactly what you're talking about. I guess I'll leave it at that and see if anybody has any follow-up questions, and I'll open up for public comment.
I actually do have some follow-up, if you don't mind.
Mr. Brown?
She brings up a really good point. I understand the need in terms of financially to do what you're doing, but we've identified, and if we haven't identified, we surely can identify things that are for the greater public safety or for low-income individuals. So I think Mayor Pro Tem brings up a really huge point, and I think we need to revisit where we spend this money, because I hadn't even thought about it until she raised the issue, and I don't see how this spending of the money meets those tests, and she hit on every mark why we have other places that could. So even if you want to wait, which I don't really understand why we would wait, it doesn't make any sense to me to wait, but if you do, there's got to be other places in the city that rise to a greater level that meet these criteria. So I won't be here, and maybe we need to hear from future council people what their thought process is. But that raises a red flag for me. So, anyway.
Just one quick comment. Any barrier removal project meet the criteria automatically because it's a barrier removal project. It's inherent in those criteria. But the location certainly is entirely up to council.
When are these funds actually going to drop in our lap? This is preliminary review this evening related to going in what direction. So I know Family Care Network is still waiting for their funds. So don't they usually get released at the latter part of 2019?
Yes, fall of 2019.
So I appreciate the discussions we're having related to targeting whatever burial removal that's being suggested tonight, but I also think it's hard to kind of project if these funds aren't in our hands right now, what would be the best use almost a year from now. The other thing that I have a question for, my recollection regarding the discussion about the South Alpine mid-block crosswalk was that was there initially, and when Grand Avenue was resurfaced or repaved, I think there were traffic studies. I'll just call it a study because I'm not sure what specific study was done, but it did not support a mid-block crosswalk, and I don't know if it was safety-driven or not as to why it was removed. And so that background might be important to bring up if we are moving off of the Castile Del Mar or whatever selection that is made. And then for me, if there is another study involved related to the prioritization of the burial removers in the city, then that might be readily available. So perhaps it would be more prudent if the council was given more of a menu related to, we have Ocean View. I know that Halcyon and Harlow, they're being looked at through our Halcyon Complete Streets. So they're going to be taken care of through another project. So I don't know, I don't really have a question here, but as far as to direct more of the discussion, for what the choices are, or, you know, is this something that can come back with a specific direction from the council for consideration of how the $56,000 would be spent? What's the best priority, even though there is a need for Castillo? But I have to concur with Mayor Pro Tem that there's very little traffic at Castillo, and we need to maybe find another way to get those ramps done when we know we have high liabilities with crosswalk issues, whether they're lighted or flashed, or people jaywalking because of the distance between point A and point B. So that's, I guess that was more, I'm done with my comments, I guess.
Well, skip over me for comments. That's kind of where I'm at.
I can just a brief follow-up. If the council is in agreement that ADA ramps are important to continue to make progress on with the CDBG money, we can certainly, upon coming back with a final recommendation, provide a little more of a menu of eligible, you know, prioritized ramps at that time. But as a category, the council may wish to proceed with ADA barrier removal projects.
Does it have to? I mean, you very specifically said ramps, and I don't think that's what we're saying. We are saying accessibility, we are saying public safety, but we're not necessarily saying ramps, you know. So I would like that menu to be expanded away from just, are we doing a ramp?
Well, then that brings up a question. I thought we always did ramps. This is what this is for, is ADA accessibility. It's not for crosswalks, because even though those are important, I don't think those fall into this, that we're allowed to use those for CDBG, or that's not what we have ever done in the past. Is that, can you use it for that, or does it have to be the barrier removal?
So in the past, the one of the three criteria, obviously, is the benefiting of low or moderate income persons. The thought process on previous applications of barrier removal projects is that typically those who have those types of needs are falling into the low or moderate income variety, whereas a crosswalk itself may not necessarily fall into that same category.
How would Castillo Del Mar fall into benefiting low and moderate income?
Again, the project there would simply be the ramps needed that we'll need to install at the driveway accesses for handicap accessibility.
Let me clarify. I believe any ADA retrofit is people with disabilities are considered by HUD to be low and moderate income persons. So that's the connection.
And isn't there also, I don't know if it's an actual penalty or fine, but isn't there also a timeline related to resources to make sure that we have ADA ramp compliance? And I don't know if that's under the Disability Act or what that's under, but it seems like there's also a clock, so to speak, on continuing to make progress in installing these ADA ramps. I know there was a big issue on Elm Street and Halcyon related to, I believe a wheelchair actually got stuck and traffic was going by because we needed to upgrade that. So,
yes, the city needs to show some kind of progress in that whole category, and ADA ramps, we have a long list, and
right.
We're just fortunate to be able to use this particular program to augment our CIP efforts wherever we're doing road projects and wherever otherwise we have targeted needs to continue to upgrade ramps that aren't meeting today's criteria,
right,
or to include ramps with new access.
It's actually required.
Yes.
Okay.
Councilmember Barnidge.
Okay, so now I have another question. We've opened the biggest can of worms ever. I
told you that was the hard one last round.
So, first of all, on the crosswalks, I'm all for some sort of eventually a crosswalk at some point, because there isn't one, but I have concerns about where that will be and how we'll do it, because I have heard from the traffic engineers that it is dangerous. So I'm not honed in on Alpine necessarily, and I think that's definitely a discussion that we're going to have when we have the plan that's going to come forward. But I'm not convinced that we have to do it right there, because I'm unsure about the safety. Okay, then this brings up a good point, because I actually was right at the high school where Valley meets Fair Oaks, where the Clark Center is, and there was a gentleman he's the gentleman that comes to speak to us in the wheelchair, and his name is Devin. Devin was going to an event at the high school, and he got stuck going off that curb ramp from where the church is to go over, because there's a pretty big, where the asphalt has rolled into kind of a little berm, and he literally was stuck out there. And so he wanted us, after the event, to help him get back across the street. I think I brought that up to the Public Works Director about a year ago. I think there maybe is a small fix that happened, but I'm getting to the point that maybe, because that's an incredibly highly traveled intersection, maybe we could use the money there.
Well, my point isn't necessarily to say that it needs to go at Alpine. It's just to bring up this idea of what is urgent, serious, and immediate. And so with that, I'll go into commentary, so I don't want to say any more than that. So why don't we invite the public up to speak on this, if there's anyone who'd like to speak. Glad to see you, Ms. Nichols.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Jenna Nichols, Five Cities Homeless Coalition. We appreciate the partnership that we have with the city, and so I'd like to at least share with you the thought process behind our application, acknowledging that there's never enough money to go around, so if it doesn't work for you, no harm, no foul. But to remind you about why we're at this point, we had a bequest through the Community Foundation that provided rapid rehousing services through our agency for 3 years, each at about $300,000 a year. That bequest expired last year. We were able to house over 150 families through that program. That's in addition to another housing program that we have, which is for ESG-funded programs, again, for rental deposit and move-in assistance, as well as eviction prevention. So our request last year and our request this year has been to maintain the level of service we have had using other funding sources that are now expired. By note, I will tell you that we have about 20% of the folks we serve are from Aurora Grande. This year to date, we have assisted 34 households who were formerly homeless or prevented eviction for folks from Aurora Grande specifically. 18 with eviction prevention, 16 with deposit move-in assistance. Again, these are Aurora Grande residents. For a total of direct financial assistance, independent of staff cost, et cetera, of $41,000. One of the challenges we have with our ESG funding, which comes to us through the county from both federal and state sources, is that we have a dollar-for-dollar match requirement based on the same activity. In other words, I can't take a dollar donated to us for the warming center and use it for our housing deposit loan program or housing deposit program. It's not a loan, but I have to use dollars matching for the same activities. So this CBDG funding allows us that opportunity to demonstrate a dollar-for-dollar match as well as maintain some of the services that we were able to provide separately through the Clapboard bequest. We'd be happy to come back if you'd like us to apply for the Jim Guthrie Award grant program. I understand the challenges there. What I will tell you is housing is expensive, and we're spending about $4,000 or $5,000 a family. And so, you know, we see this as an opportunity, say 15% for public facilities or public services. And so that's where we went. But again, I understand the dilemmas that you have, but I did want to refresh you as to the context of why you began to see our applications coming forward when you had not previously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good
3514 Starlight Lane. I commented on this quickly last year. I actually didn't do my homework, so I kind of apologize for not having great comments on it. I do think we go back to the original intent and goal of the Chip Guthrie Fund was that we would have both a fiscally responsible, because we had it was budget neutral, and we were encouraging government efficiency. I'm just saying we've certainly gotten away from that. We got away from it last year, and we're continuing to be away from that this year. The funding for the non-restricted Jim Guthrie Fund was specifically that nonprofits would not have to go through all of the HUD requirements. We actually doubled the funding. It went from $10,000 to $20,000 that year, and I think that was in anticipation of the fact that since nobody had to meet the HUD funding, there would be a lot of other much smaller applications, things like public art. So that was the why it was increased. So it's already not quite as fiscally responsible as at least I envisioned it. The second part of that was, of course, the government efficiency. Was government efficiency, and you can see how quickly we get away from that. Here we have a process. Now we have two processes that are huge. Well, maybe huge. I mean, we're going to spend 2 or 3 hours on it tonight and $5,500 of staff time on this. When really this, if we continued with the program specifically at curb cuts or whatever that is, we have, as I understand it, millions of dollars in ADA curb cuts that we're going to have to do over the next 20 years. Every road that gets resurfaced will require at least some curb cuts when we make them. So we have plenty of opportunity to have just a straight program that says this is what we're going to do. Because this year it's five cities homeless. Next year it might be three other people who see this opportunity, legitimately see it as an opportunity for them to get funding and maybe in addition to the funding. So if this is the direction you want to go, I hope you don't, that you're going to start funding it from here, because really neither of these programs qualified last year. Family Care Network doesn't fit either of those criteria either. They're certainly not budget neutral. I'm stepping on it. So at any rate, so you should either eliminate the Guthrie Fund and go this way, or establish whatever your criteria is going to be and stick with it to make it simple. Make it simple for staff. It shouldn't be a big process. They shouldn't really be dealing with applications. They should just be telling people, you can apply, but this is the direction we have. But as soon as you open up the opportunity and sort of force staff to be in the difficult position of telling really, people who are doing great work, say, sorry, we're just encouraging to turn these into big processes. I, too, question the Castillo del Mar, one of our richest neighborhoods. And I just say that even Montego is not exactly low income. So I just quickly point out the Castillo del Mar is actually a new road, as I understand it, which would add pedestrian connections behind the high school. But I agree with you, there are many, many other opportunities in Castillo del Mar or even Montego for that matter.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. Keith Storton of Rio Grande. Thanks, Tim. I think I'll jump in the hot seat now. Just looking over this, I would really have to do some research as far as the Jim Guthrie and the CDBG awarding and how that is done. And quite honestly, I'm not completely up to speed on that. It sounded like this would be a one-time donation commitment to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. From this point forward, it would go into the other portion of the street repairs and needs for handicap accessibility. I had a couple of questions, though. Teresa brought up the Grand Avenue Master Plan, and although that will be broached next year, what would the timeline be in order to introduce a crosswalk on Grand Avenue near Alpine? And I imagine that would be a timely process and wouldn't meet. It might take a couple of years for us to get to that point. As far as Castillo del Mar, is there any future logistical problems or more expenses to the city for not addressing that immediately, if that is a concern? So that would be one question I had. I like the idea that Councilmember Harmon brought up about presenting council with a list, a menu, potentially something that can be looked at where we can thoughtfully consider the different aspects and considerations for potential emergency needs where this money could be used and addressed in that type of manner. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
All right. Teresa, did you want to address those couple of questions from Councilmember-elect Storton?
Certainly, the master plan for Grand Avenue, very early in the year, it's something that we have a lot of work into, and we're pretty excited about, and it's a big opportunity for the city. I just don't know exactly when we'll get environmental review wrapped up in a draft out on the street, but certainly early next year. Then through that process, that public process, and council hopeful adoption of that plan, we'll have location identified for certain improvements, including the crossings that are very important. But I wouldn't anticipate once we get the plan adopted and then the many improvements that it will probably necessitate. We would just have to prioritize in that plan for when those would happen, including the mid-block crosswalk. Certainly, wherever there's a crosswalk, there will be two or more ramps, so that would certainly be eligible for CDBG funding.
And the other question had to do with, he didn't use the word penalties, but issues with not doing Castillo Del Mar.
We will have new driveway aprons and access points in our road project, and we will have to make sure they get constructed with whatever funds are available.
Okay.
So,
Mr. Bergman?
Clarity on that. It's either use CDBG funds or use general funds.
The road project is underfunded at this time, so that is likely correct.
Well, everything's underfunded, so... Now, I do have a follow-up question if nobody else is ready to. My question is, you mentioned we have lots and lots of ramps, a long list of ramps. And if Councilmember Barnidge is correct, and if the council decided to kind of follow the recommendation of Mr. Guthrie, which is, hey, let's continue to just do ramps, it would be relatively easy for you to get us a list of high priority ramp areas as this comes forward, and we can maybe take another look at what this would look like before we come towards the March date when we actually have to allocate these monies.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that. So that brings us back to us. Who would like to go first?
I can go first. Okay. I just have one follow-up question before I go to comments. Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Matt, walk me through the conversation you're going to have next year when we get calls from nonprofits that say, I want to apply for CDBG.
It depends on how the council directs us this evening.
Okay. All right.
We're going first now?
Okay, I'm going first. Okay, so I am in favor of allocating the $7,500 to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. With the very, very clear understanding that we really, and I'm not saying, you know, this is Five Cities Homeless Coalition's fault, because we gave them money last year, and I think I'd keep asking for money if I kept getting money. So I think that we just have to be really clear if that's the direction of the council, that we're really going to use this for the barriers, which I think is good. And former Councilmember Guthrie brought up the fact that this is actually more money than we used to typically give out towards the public services. So, okay, going forward with that. And then I definitely think it's a good idea to come back with a list of, I am in favor of the architectural barriers being removed for ADA accessibility, but would love a list so that we can sort of weigh where we think the biggest need for the community, the biggest bang for our buck is. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Herman?
Certainly. And to carry on a trend by Councilmember Barnidge, I have one more question before I go into comment. How many curb ramp cutouts does $56,000 buy us? Isn't it about $5,000 to $6,000 per cutout? So, what's the ballpark on one?
Yeah, they vary a little bit in terms of grade and so forth, but yeah, they'll about six.
About six. So on average, ladies and gentlemen, you want a little ramp by the sidewalks, it's about $6,000, just to give an idea of the expenses going on. So thank you for that. I am in favor of continuing for the 2019 for the $7,500 for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. And I say this because in our discussion last year, and also Director Nichols reminded us that if we're able to allocate and skim the top of this pot of money, then that's $7,500 more that could go to other nonprofits that may not have the large umbrella network that Five Cities Homeless Coalition, because they get funding from a lot of different streams of funding. Whereas I'm thinking of the Senior Center, for example, that has less means and less ability to garner grants and such. So I look at it as there's $7,500 more in the Jim Guthrie account, so to speak. Well, let me rephrase that, the community grant account for those nonprofits. So I would be willing, again, with the caveat that reconsideration would be next year. I also support streamlining it for staff. If it's already $5,500 in city administrative costs just for the paperwork, then maybe our next task would be to really pinpoint that we want whatever the priority is, as long as it fits the criteria, that be our priority, and that a menu is brought to the council to say, this is what you directed us to do. These are your priority choices. Which one do you want to prioritize? We wrap it up and send it on. So I would be in favor of getting a curb cutout ramp list, however it's going to be entitled, and maybe bringing that back to council to really do some priority installation, because we know we've got some liability there. And I'm hearing the need for Castillo, but I'm not hearing a liability for Castillo. And we'll just have to find another way to get that completed. So that would be where I'd be headed tonight.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you very much. I was all prepared to vote for this, and I will vote for this, but Mayor-elect's comments really gave me pause about our priorities. And Mr. Guthrie brought up a very good point about the efficiency issue. The whole point of doing this was so that we wouldn't spend hours and hours and hours determining for a very small amount of money. So while I'm willing to go forward at this point based on the advisory, I'm a little discouraged, quite honestly, that Mr. Bergman said it was a way of saving money from the general fund. That makes me wonder if when the original estimate done, and maybe it is and maybe it wasn't, maybe there needs to be a debrief or something among staff about whether there was enough money allocated for that project to begin with, if we're trying to use CBG funds for something that should have been paid for, I think, through the development process. So those are my comments. I don't think it's an appropriate use of funds to fund something that should have been funded through development. But that's just my personal opinion. I'll leave it up to the next council to figure it out. But I think hitting the guidelines Ms. Ray brought up are very important versus saying, well, this needs to get done and it's the closest project. That just concerns me a bit. So I'll leave my comments at that, but I'm willing to support the current recommendation for this year, but I think we should simplify it so it doesn't keep coming up, because I think it defeats the purpose of having the Jim Guthrie Fund if we're still spending hours and hours dealing with small amounts of money. So, thank you.
I have a question, Council Member Harmon. I heard you, I want to make sure I heard you right,
yes,
as I'm considering what I'm doing here. I heard you say that you were in support of the 5Cs Homes Coalition grant this year, coming out of this, because it freed up money in the Jim Guthrie Community Services grants.
Yes.
So are you, is your expectation that 5Cs Homeless Coalition will not be in that group of 20, in that 20,000? In other words, it's freeing up money so that you're saying it's freeing it up so they're not going to be asking for money out of the second pot.
Specifically, no, I don't want to restrict anybody from applying to the Jim Guthrie Community Grant. What I'm saying is that the $7,500 would be that much less that any nonprofit would come forward to ask of us related to that. So, yeah, it wasn't restricting in any way related to any other, because there might be the warming shelter that may be an appropriate application. So, yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure I heard you right. And Councilmember Brown, did I hear you say that you were okay with it? I heard you say you were ready to go forward tonight, but then I heard you a little concerned about the public facilities. So were you saying you're ready to go forward kind of in concept?
Well, it's up. It's going to be up to the new council, because this is advisory, so I don't want to go too far. But my point is, the whole idea that Mr. Guthrie brought up was that this was supposed to be a streamlined process, and yet we somehow allowed it to get away from that. And so that's my only concern. I have no problem giving the Homeless Coalition what they need. It's a question of what pot of money it comes from and how much energy and time do we spend trying to figure it out.
Thank you. Thank you for those clarifications. So, for me, I'm struggling a little bit with continuing with the public services part of this, but I will go with the will of the council now, and especially as it's advisory. But, you know, again, with the staff's caveat that, you know, I don't want to say this is it, but again, with the whole point that this was supposed to be moving the public services into a different category. But in terms of going forward, I would not support it going forward in this form. I know you've heard what we're saying and you're taking all the notes, and that's great. I'm not quite sure how we move forward on this in an advisory capacity if the majority of the council is saying, look, we don't think Castillo Del Mar should be in this group. So I don't want to not move this forward. I don't want to have you bring it forward again before March, because that's just kind of a waste of your time and a waste of the public's time in terms of making a whole nother staff report. So is it adequate for us to, in an advisory capacity tonight, to say we approve this in concept, but the public facilities portion of that, we want to see that come back in a different form based on what you're hearing tonight when it comes forward in March? Or do we need to do something in between there?
I believe we will be fine if you provide the direction this evening to attribute this amount to the barrier removal project for the city, which will be as prioritized in the future. The categorization and the amount is the important part this evening.
Okay. All right. With that, anyone?
What Teresa said. So I would like to move to provide preliminary approval specifically for the public services project category for the 5 Cities Homeless Coalition for the proposed 2019 allocation of $7,500. And then also with the modification that the council targets burial removal projects under the public facilities project category for the remainder of
the allocated amount of about $56,000.
Second.
Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, Kelly, can we get a roll call, please?
Excuse me. Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes. Under item 11, we have no old business. 12, we have no new business. Council communications?
I have.
Yes, ma'am.
I have one as well.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Ladies first.
Greetings, everybody. Since November 8th, a team from Five Cities Fire Authority has been dispatched to assist with fire suppression efforts for the Woosley Fire in the Malibu area. Captain Tom Huey has been assigned as an OES strike team and is an actual team leader in training. Brush 1 unit is there with the compliments of Captain Brian Levers, Engineer Joe Farnsworth, Firefighter Burl Freeland, and Reserve Firefighter Paul Spencer. Also, I want to acknowledge Captain Mike Barnidge from Santa Maria Fire Department, who is actually our strike team leader for Brush 1, and he has been on that assignment as well at the Woolsey Fire. I also wanted to reach out to the spouses and the families of these firefighters, and I wanted to let them know that we have you in our thoughts and that we thank you for your support of your loved ones when they're away from home and assisting others as well as our community. A little caveat to that is via a Twitter feed from someone you may know, Jessica Simpson. Apparently, Brush 1, with the leadership of Captain Barnidge and our crew, actually saved her house, and she reached out via Twitter to thank our personnel for doing that, and I'm sure there's all kinds of other stories related to the other personnel that are down there leading and doing the fire suppression efforts as well as saving the homes, but I thought that was an interesting piece of information that hits close to our homes as well. And then to change the subject, I also would like to promote the Rio Grande Women's Club is having their 11th annual Artesian Fair. It's a great place to pick up wonderful gift items for Christmas. That is happening this Saturday, November 17th. It is actually at our Rio Grande Community Center on Vernon and West Branch, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and the proceeds here support their scholarship efforts and other charities in our communities. And I might want to add that there'll be homemade apple pie for purchase. So thank you, everybody, for that. And that concludes my public service announcement.
Councilmember Brown?
Thank you for those comments about the firefighting. It puts everything in perspective. I just want to tell you, the council-elect people, tomorrow there's a meeting at 1:30 for the IWMA in the supervisor's chambers. If you have any desire to sit on that committee, you might want to go. They're going to do the RFP for a forensic audit. I think we have a really good interim administrator, but there might be some fireworks tomorrow, and it might be interesting or it might be very boring. It just depends, but it might be worth going just to get a feel for what you're in for going forward. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnidge?
No, just that, just to piggyback on what Councilmember Harmon said, there are a lot of law enforcement personnel as well and fire personnel down at that fire, thousands and thousands, and there's actually a lot from our area. So if everyone could just kind of keep them in their thoughts and hope they get that under control and come back soon. Thank you.
Lastly, I have a request. Mr. Bergman, I don't want to make this an agenda item, and I don't want to make this a big deal, but perhaps in your next city manager's report, rather than agendizing, you know, we have an urban forest here, and we have significant open space with significant potential. And it might be good to just kind of quickly address how we're ready for, as a city, for any possibilities here, just to kind of help our community feel like we're on the ball and we know what we're doing in terms of our urban forest and making sure that we have our community protected. that takes us to closed session, of which we don't have one, which brings us to item 16, adjournment.
Woo-hoo. Anyone making a motion?
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in a couple weeks.